I'm Owen Jensen. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, while overseas in the Mideast, President Donald Trump sits down with Syria's new president, who earlier ended the rule of the former dictator Assad. We have the details. Israeli airstrikes pound Gaza, killing dozens, including children. The strikes, a day after Prime Minister Netanyahu said there was no way he would halt Israel's offensive before Hamas is defeated. Big, beautiful bill. Members of Congress work into the night to iron out details of a reconciliation package. We're on Capitol Hill. And the Universal Church. Pope Leo XIV welcomes members of the Eastern Catholic Churches to the Vatican. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you very much for being with us on this Feast of St. Matthias, our top story tonight. President Donald Trump's trip to the Middle East generates more international headlines, including meeting with a former fighter who took over Syria. And he laid out his goals for Iran to give up its nuclear weapons program. There's also a brand new $96 billion Boeing jet order from Qatar.
President Donald Trump meets Middle Eastern leaders in Saudi Arabia.
The whole world is watching the Middle East, and many are watching with envy. You have something very special going on.
On the sidelines, President Trump also agreed to see the militant leader who took over Syria, the first presidential meeting between the two countries in 25 years. This comes after Trump announced he would drop sanctions against Syria.
The sanctions were really crippling, very powerful.
President Trump also told the Gulf Cooperation Council about his desire to make a deal with Iran if they stop supporting terrorists and wind down their nuclear program.
They cannot have a nuclear weapon.
And after a royal send-off in Saudi Arabia, President Trump spoke on Air Force One about his push to get a ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine. But it's unclear if Russian President Vladimir Putin will show up for talks in Turkey on Thursday.
He would like me to be there, and that's a possibility. If we could end the war, I'd be thinking about that.
President Trump then arrived at the second country in his Mideast tour, Qatar. His motorcade was escorted by red cyber trucks and a caravan of camels. The Emir of Qatar provided a grand welcome and arrival ceremony for Trump's state visit.
I've known you for many years. I know that you're a man of peace. I know that you want to bring peace to this region.
The Emir has high hopes for President Trump's effort to end the war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. The U.S. and Qatar also signed new economic and defense deals.
Kelly's telling me from Boeing it's the largest order of jets in the history of Boeing. That's pretty good.
President Trump capped off the day with a formal state dinner at a palace.
Staying in the Middle East, some lawmakers want Congress to sign off on any free plane Qatar might give to President Trump. The White House says it's not Trump's plane and that it's being donated to the U.S. Air Force. The Wall Street Journal says some GOP lawmakers have national security concerns over the $400 million gift. The president defends accepting the gift, saying it would save taxpayers money and reward Qatar for a job well done. He also says the current presidential planes are outdated and is frustrated by delays to a contract with Boeing for a new Air Force One. President Trump has indicated he would refurbish the aircraft and it would later be donated to his presidential library. We turn now to Richard Painter, a former White House ethics lawyer under President George W. Bush. Sir, thanks for being here. You have said this is something the framers would be worried about, the 747 plane going to President Trump. Explain.
Well, absolutely. The framers, of course, didn't know about airplanes, much less the 747 palace in the sky, as they say. But imagine if King George III had given a gift of a golden coach, similar to the coach that's still used by the King of England, to George Washington. And said, well, this is yours. You can use it as long as you're president. Then, oh, you'll just give it to your library named after you. That's the first thing that the founders would have said, that the president needs to ask for consent of Congress.
Let me ask you this, the Emoluments Clause, if I may, and we just have short time, so if I interrupt, I apologize ahead of time, but we're going to have to get through this. But the Emoluments Clause in the Constitution, tell the viewers at home what that focuses on.
The Emoluments Clause prohibits a person holding a position of trust with the United States government from accepting any present or office or emolument. that being a profit or advantage from a foreign government without the consent of Congress. And this provision was put in the Constitution because the founders were very concerned that our government officials could be bribed with gifts from abroad. Benjamin Franklin was given a snuff box with diamonds encrusted on it by the King of France. He came back to the United States and he asked for permission from Congress to keep the gift, which was granted. But everyone understood that these types of gifts were unacceptable unless Congress consented because of the risk of corruption.
Okay, let me cut you off there. Let me play some sound bites here to listen to. I want you to listen to what Republican lawmakers are saying and get your reaction on the other side. Take a listen.
My understanding is it's not a personal gift to the president. It's a gift to the United States, and other nations give us gifts all the time. But I'm going to leave it to the administration. They know much more about the details of that, okay? It's not my lane.
I think I saw the president say that he accepted it on behalf of the U.S. government and specifically the Department of Defense. That's all that I think that they're capable of doing. If there's a subsequent discussion about it being in a library, I don't think there can be any commitment or understanding in advance other than that would be a preference.
I'm sure there'll be lawyers take a look at it, make sure there's nothing wrong with it, nothing illegal. If we have to vote on it, we'll vote on it, and then we'll see. But I think it's something that's new. It's a concept that, yeah, $400 million aircraft, that's an expensive gift. I get it. But also, it's not on the taxpayers. Will it be something that's going to have nefarious software on it or something like that?
All right, Mr. Painter, reaction. You take your pick there.
Well, first, we already have a contract out there with Boeing to build a new Air Force One. So this isn't going to save the taxpayers any money whatsoever. This aircraft, if it's turned over to the Department of Defense, would have to be stripped down to make sure that there's nothing in that aircraft that could compromise the security of the President of the United States or his communication systems. So we'd have a stripped down 747 that would be the property of the U.S. Department of Defense. I don't know what this idea to end up in a library is. And I don't know why we would want to accept a gift for the Department of Defense of a 747 aircraft from Qatar. That's not what the president's talking about,
though. 15 seconds here we have. The president says he would not use the plane once he leaves office.
Well, this doesn't make any sense. It's going to take a long time to strip this airline down and find out whether there's anything in there that can interfere with communication systems for the president or the security of the president of the United States. He's not going to be able to use it for a while anyway. It will cost taxpayers more money to accept this aircraft. And I don't know why he wants this other than he's enamored of this particular aircraft, the way it's configured, which is unusable as Air Force One.
Richard Painter, we thank you for your time and your point of view. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Other news tonight, dozens are dead after Israeli airstrikes pound the Gaza Strip. The dead include almost two dozen children. There have been widespread hope that President Trump's visit to the Middle East could usher in a ceasefire deal or renewal of humanitarian aid to Gaza. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu said there was no way he would halt Israel's offensive in the Palestinian territory before Hamas is defeated.
First of all, things have changed. We are, I do not want to say now, but a few days away from entering Gaza with great strength to complete the mission. Completing the move means subduing Hamas. It means destroying Hamas.
Israeli media reports one target in a Tuesday strike on a hospital in Gaza was Mohammed Sinwar, younger brother of dead Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar. Mohammed Sinwar is believed to be the top military leader of Hamas. Israel has tried to assassinate him multiple times over the past decades. Well, today was the final day of the Eastern Church's Jubilee pilgrimage at the Vatican. On the occasion, the Greek Melkite, Ukrainian Greek, and Romanian Greek Catholic churches celebrated a divine liturgy in the Byzantine Rite in St. Peter's Basilica, together with other Byzantine Rite churches. Earlier, Pope Leo highlighted the need to preserve their traditions and pray for true peace. The Holy Father urged those present not to abandon their ancestral lands and assured them he will do everything he can to bring peace there. Metropolitan Archbishop Boris Gudziak was in the audience. He says Pope Leo's words bring hope to the people of Ukraine.
Well, Ukraine has been the story, one of the stories of the last years, and it is brought out by journalists who risk their lives to show the truth, to show what people are suffering, to show the evil of war, but also the valor of those who protect the innocent. And no one knows exactly right now, but about 20 journalists have given their lives in covering this war.
And coming up later in the newscast, a closer look at the Holy Father's alma mater in Rome, the Pontifical University of St. Thomas Aquinas. Well, we have a lot more to come here on EWTN News Nightly. Pope Leo XIV is recognized in Washington, D.C. Details of a new resolution introduced in honor of the new pope. And the pope has already taken aim at the potential dangers of AI, artificial intelligence. We speak to an expert about potential threats of AI and what the Catholic Church can do about it. Welcome back. A judge has struck down Michigan's 24-hour waiting period before an abortion. The judge also overturned a regulation requiring abortion providers to offer a fetal development chart and information about alternatives. These measures come after abortion was codified into the state constitution back in 2022. U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. appeared before lawmakers today on Capitol Hill. He defended downsizing the agency from 82,000 workers to 62,000 to save money. He also said HHS will not fund studies based on gender ideology.
We will fund cutting-edge research at NIH while cutting risky or non-essential studies. That includes ending gain-of-function experiments and research based upon radical gender ideologies. At the CDC, we will return to core missions, tracking disease, investigating outbreaks, and sustaining public health infrastructure while cutting waste.
The Republican-backed reconciliation bill is slowly moving ahead in the U.S. House. A number of obstacles and disagreements remain, even among GOP lawmakers. And it could throw a wrench into getting the bill on the House floor by next week. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has the latest. Eric.
Good evening. The lights were on all night and lots of coffee available for House lawmakers on the Ways and Means Committee along with the Commerce Committee as they both held marathon sessions that lasted into the morning. Republicans are putting the final touches on the One Big Beautiful Bill with President Trump's agenda. House Speaker Mike Johnson says that it will be one of the most important bills Congress has ever passed.
We're going to slash taxes, including on tips, overtime, Social Security for seniors and job creators, restore American energy dominance, as you've heard, secure our border and deport illegal aliens. We're going to eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse.
Speaker Johnson says there are no Medicaid cuts to qualified persons. Democrats say Republicans are ignoring the needs of millions of Americans. And Freedom Caucus Chair Congressman Andy Harris calls the bill, quote, a joke. The swamp is real. He adds the common sense work requirement for able-bodied adults doesn't start for 4 years into the next administration and can be waived by any state for hardship that they determine, and they will. Democrat Caucus Chair Pete Aguilar says Republicans met their goal.
This week, Republicans have laid out exactly who they are fighting for. After weeks of promises that they wouldn't cut Medicaid, their budget contains drastic cuts that will throw millions off of health insurance.
Another issue, the amount of state and local tax deductions known as SALT, currently at $10,000, but the Ways and Means Committee raised it to $30,000, and some say that's too much.
Civilization won't melt if we go with a $30,000 SALT deduction. Frankly, if it were up to me, it would be a lot less. That SALT deduction just helps wealthy people in three states, New York, New Jersey, and California.
The Cato Institute's Tax Policy Studies Director agrees it's nothing more than a bailout.
The right size of the SALT deduction is zero for both individuals and businesses. And the few holdouts in the Republican Party are just holding this tax bill hostage for a bigger bailout.
The House Budget Committee will meet on Friday morning to officially write up the bill. Once the committees wrap up their work, then Speaker Johnson hopes to send the bill to the Rules Committee for any final changes on Monday. And if all goes well, to the House floor for a vote before the Memorial Day recess starts. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Eric, thank you. Catholic Congressman Raleigh Moore of West Virginia introduced a resolution on the House floor today congratulating the Holy Father, Pope Leo XIV, on his historic election.
We just want to congratulate the Pope, the sense of Congress, to congratulate him in his new role. And so it's a very exciting time, I think, for all Catholics, but particularly Catholics here in the United States.
The resolution not only recognizes Pope Leo as the 267th leader of the Catholic Church and the first American pontiff, but it also commends his lifetime of service, humility, and commitment to embodying Christ's mercy and pastoral care. It also extends prayers to the Holy Father as he shepherds the more than 1 billion Catholics around the globe. Leo is also a naturalized citizen of Peru, having ministered there for decades. In the early days of his papacy, Pope Leo XIV has signaled that AI, artificial intelligence, will be a big concern for humanity. The Holy Father, in fact, says AI is one of the major factors leading to picking his name, Pope Leo XIV. Speaking to cardinals this past weekend, Pope Leo said the Church offers its social teaching in the face of another industrial revolution. He added that artificial intelligence poses challenges for the defense of human dignity, justice, and labor. And joining us now is Paul Steidler, Senior Fellow with the Lexington Institute. Thank you, sir, for joining us. Get right to it. Pope Leo has a big challenge on his hands as he enters the pontificate. AI, what do you think will be his strategy in dealing with it?
Well, I think his strategy is going to be to embrace it. AI is based on mathematics, which is what the Pope has a degree in. And the Pope comes from a Augustinian background at Villanova, where the respect for science and reason is highly respected. That's something that Villanova President Peter Donahue talked about in a press release about the naming of Robert Prevost as Pope. The thing about AI is it can be used for either very good or very nefarious purposes. It can be used so that we find ways to grow more crops, ways in which we can address medical diseases more quickly. But it can be also used for very nefarious purposes. And we have to be very concerned, and I think the Pope will be very concerned, about what China is doing, the godless communist Chinese government is doing with AI to repress its own people and exporting that technology externally. That's not the only source of concerns there, but the world is going to be a much better place. It's going to be much better for Roman Catholics and Christians and all people of faith if the U.S. and those who we are allied with are the ones who are driving AI and putting it forward instead of the Chinese. And we need to find ways to do that so that people's dignity is protected. The U.S. Congress just about 2 weeks ago passed the Take It Down Act, a measure that provides much better ways to get revenge porn and AI-generated porn of different people off the internet, and those are good things. But I think the Pope is going to have he knows the importance of this. This affects how we're going to be economically, how we're going to be socially, and it behooves the U.S. and the Vatican to work closely together here, much as the two did against the USSR and the Soviet bloc during Pope John Paul II's reign.
You know, and we could talk for hours on this, I'm sure, because this is such a complicated and complex subject, and obviously a very serious one. On a more, in terms of evangelization, spreading the faith,
sure.
How can AI help there? How can the Pope utilize AI to spread the faith across the globe?
Well, one thing he can do is to make sure that the Chinese do not distort Christian teachings. You know, the Chinese are using AI and technology to change the text of the scriptures. They have, as your network has reported so magnificently, very negatively influenced the appointment of bishops in China. The bigger thing is AI is a way to get more information out there. So it's a way to more quickly for example, go through the Confessions of St. Augustine and find those things that are going to be key. If someone does not have time necessarily to read the whole thing, it's a way to ask spiritual questions, at least for an initial guidance. What does the scripture, what does church teaching say about X? And it's important not to rely just on the AI-generated information that comes in, but to go to those primary sources, some of which a person of faith may have in their own home, and go to them and look at them more quickly. So I think it's going to be very helpful. It depends a lot on how the individual uses it. But there are ways to use it that are going to be very strengthening and empowering to understand the faith better and to learn things more quickly that in previous times might have taken 2-3 days worth of research at a library and going through the card catalog and all that different stuff.
Yeah, it truly is amazing. Lots of threats on one hand, but lots of possibilities on the other. Paul, thank you very much for your time. We look forward to having you back on soon.
It was great to be with you, Owen.
Okay, take care. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a papal civics lesson. Now that he's the head of the Vatican, a foreign government, can Pope Leo XIV keep his American citizenship? We have the answer. Plus, the Holy Father's alma mater. We go to the school where he studied and show you the other holy alumnus from the same university. Stick around. Following Pope Leo XIV's election, many are wondering if he can remain a U.S. citizen while pontiff. The U.S. State Department says it presumes U.S. citizens want to keep their citizenship unless clearly and credibly established otherwise, even when accepting a foreign governed position. An immigration attorney adds that unless the Holy Father steps forward and says he intends to relinquish his citizenship, then he will remain a citizen. If he does remain a citizen, he will potentially still have to file a tax return with the IRS. The newly elected Pope is American with deep roots in Peru, where he served for many years. But his journey also led him to Italy, where he studied with the Dominicans at the Angelicum. Now his alma mater rejoices with pride and excitement at the news of his election. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Cederin has more.
Eminentissimum, ac reverendissimum Dominum, Dominum Robertum Franciscum, Sancte Ecclesiae, Cardinalem Prevost.
As the Universal Church celebrates the gift of a new pope, there is one university in Rome where the joy is felt a little more deeply and the cheers are a little louder. The Pontifical University of St. Thomas Aquinas, also known as the Angelicum, is not only the alma mater of Pope St. John Paul II, but now also of Pope Leo XIV.
Astonishingly, both John Paul II and Leo XIV did their doctoral work here. And so for our university, it's just an unspeakable honor that we've been involved in the formation of two of the last four popes. I think we're still just trying to get our mind around the mercy and the unmerited grace of that confirmation, that we are at the service of the formation of the personnel of the church.
Before becoming pope, Robert Prevost studied at the Angelicum between the years 1981 and 1985, earning both a licentiate and doctorate in canon law. In 1987, he successfully defended his doctoral thesis on the role of the local prior in the Order of St. Augustine, where he explains how the prior is supposed to refer himself to Christ and to the rule and cultivate a selfless way of life for the service of the common good of all.
I have been reading his thesis, and it's a really mature work of a 30-year-old who is extremely learned, very well-read, and deeply thoughtful and spiritual, reflecting on obedience and authority in the Catholic Church. Now, of course, he's talking about the prior, and he's talking about the Augustinian rule, and he's talking about the Augustinian friars community, but the vision could be extended up into the episcopacy in principle or up to, you know, the papacy. So it's really interesting how God prepared him for this kind of task of being a leader in the Catholic Church.
For the international community studying at the Angelicum, the special connection to the new pope has brought an added sense of excitement and pride.
I feel like I have the tangible connection as well, because it's the same halls and the same classrooms, you know, going right back even to heroes of mine like Father Garrigou-Lagrange and these men. So yeah, surreal, but it's also really exciting, you know, and you feel a great sense of pride that you're part of the same institution which has produced so many great theologians and hopefully saints.
For American students, especially those at the Pontifical North American College in Rome, the election of the first American pope brings the papacy closer because of Pope Leo's experience with American culture and tradition.
And one of the things I keep kind of coming back to and praying about is, you know, the American College was founded in Rome so that American seminarians could come to know and love the Holy Father in a deeper way, and now to have an even more special connection, that the man that has filled the seat, that has stepped into the shoes of Peter, understands me in a way that in the past they maybe hadn't.
No matter where they come from, students shared great joy in knowing that they are walking in the footsteps of great men, those who came before them and those now called to lead the church, and in realizing that their own daily lives may not be so different from what theirs once was.
I'm personally so grateful for the formation education I'm getting here at the Angelicum. So to think that our Holy Father, our spiritual father here on earth, has to receive the same foundation and formation, the tradition of St. Thomas Aquinas and the thought of St. Thomas Aquinas is just incredible, and also adds to, in some way, a personal connection to him, to just think like, oh, when I get a coffee here, maybe he got a coffee here.
This is one of those people who helps you, it helps you see the important impact that the Roman universities and Roman institutions have, the role they play in preparing future leaders and, you might say, cultural protagonists who bring the gospel out into the public life of the world. So we're very grateful for that.
In Rome, Benedictia de Grian, EWTN News Nightly.
Amen.
Thank you very much. And finally tonight, the Italian Open Tennis Tournament is taking place in Rome. And today, the Pope had a chance to work on his backhand a little bit. During an off day from the tournament, the top-ranked player in the world, Jannik Sinner, met Pope Leo XIV. The new Holy Father is an avid tennis fan. Sinner, according to published reports, is a practicing Catholic. Sinner brought Pope Leo one of his rackets, in fact, and told the Pope with his white papal robes he meets the dress code to play at Wimbledon. That'd be neat to see. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Owen Jensen. Good night. God bless.